project, we'll keep the front yard.
I wanted to start off and say my brother's birthday is today. This dude. Thank you, brother. Thank you. He's the one who got me into computers, so I thank him for everything that happened. How old are you, 30?
Yep.
So, detecting and defending your network from script kiddies. Now, I don't know how many people are into security here. You probably have some programmers, sysadmins, desktop support. I've been to like maybe 400 speeches, and there's always a time in a speech where you have people dozing off, you have people like just snoring. So what I'm trying to do is do something different. If you come to my speeches, I try to make it very entertaining for everyone, even if you don't even do computers. So I'm just gonna play some music while I present, and I'll talk over it so everybody can hear me. But the people that don't like security and left with this, I mean, say entertain with the music. So I'll start off. Who am I? Marco Figueroa, Marco Hacker, Neil Caffrey, Michael Weston. If you don't know who those people, look them up. They're some cool ass cats. People that don't know me might think of me as this. Pirate, doing malicious things. But people who do know me, like Hans over here, he thinks I'm this. Quiet, stealthy. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done and I retire and I hang up the cape, I would hope to be like this guy. So here's my credibility slide. Speaking engagements, I spoke at ZipCon, the largest conference in the world. It's great, it's in Las Vegas. I'll tell you right now, if you look our speech up, me and my brother did it on VLAN and Layer 2 attacks. We were throwing money in the crowd, passing out some $100 chips. It was really entertaining. That was my brother's idea, by the way. We spoke at the Last Hope. They called it the Last Hope, but in July, I believe they have been hope as well, right?
Next Hope?
July 14th, 15th,
something like that. There you go. But everybody goes to the BSD conference, right? When is that?
It's 12th, 13th, and 14th of November.
All right. So, consultant, I consult for Fortune 100 companies. One of the companies is based on this presentation that I'm doing. I'm published in Hack 9, hopefully later on this year. I should be putting out a book for Sangris or Nosarch, whoever gives me more money. It's all about pimping his skills. So, let me paint a picture for you so that everybody can be a little scared. 2003 blackout. The first thing they said, I know who's in New York City in 2003. Everybody? That blackout affected everybody. They said that a grid went down in Canada, which then cascaded down. Now,
Ohio.
What was that?
Ohio.
Ohio. There you go. Ohio, right? Why did that week the blaster worm came out? The Sasser or Blaster? One of the two. That week it came out, it affected in Ohio where it originated from. So I never heard of it. Excuse? Have you heard of an excuse? Anybody? How the power grid went down? I know, you know, allegedly, that was the reason. In my heart, I know why it went down. So, yesterday article, cyber insecurity, U.S. government struggles. This was yesterday. If you want to Google it, NPR, cyber insecurity, Tony Blair testifies to the intelligence committee. The first sentence out of his mouth was malicious cyber activity is growing at an unprecedented rate. Now, like I did in the presentation on DEFCON, if they want your company, you can't do nothing about it. I don't care how good you are in security. I really don't care. You could just talk my ear off. I have this, I have stands, I have... No. There's nothing protecting you if they want you. All right, so here's my ESPN Packer highlights. April and June 2007, 20 terabytes of information was stolen from the government. I just want to know, how do you not know they're downloading 20 terabytes of information? You know, that's more than the Library of Congress, and they downloaded that from those 3 months. Now, they said it was China. I don't know who really did it, but whatever. August 2008, hackers gained access to the McCain-Obama campaign headquarters and hacked their email. That's why they created Obama's BlackBerry and encrypted it with their own cipher. July 2009, cyber attacks was launched against the government and private sector. WashingtonPost.com had a denial of service attack and it went down. Now, last September and October, the government put out a briefing. They said, we're pushing it to CNN, MSNBC, and saying we need 20,000 hackers to come work for us. We need that for our infrastructure. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We're getting 10,000 attacks a day. It's too much for us, and they're winning. They're winning. No ifs, ands, or buts. Now, this is why they're always going to be on the losing end. Because let's say George over here, they want to hire him. Now, the process to get in is something that I would say maybe 4 or 5 people to really get in. So that's why they're going to be losing all the time. They got to ease up on that process so people can get hired for these jobs. But they want 20,000 hackers. I don't know. I don't think it's possible. Oh, yeah.
What was the story that you had that you were telling me yesterday about the hacker, Machi Boy?
Yeah. So come back to me. I'll get at you on that. So, Zeus. Now we're, I call it the Pimp of the Year Award. Now, has anybody heard of Zeus? Mallory. Have you heard of the back end of it? The back end is the most wickedest program you will ever see in your life. It has a GUI interface that controls the malware that's on the user's workstation. So put it like this, I would take that application and use it as an enterprise application, because that's how good it is. It'll let you delete, encrypt files, format the whole machine. They have bot armies, obviously, and the cool thing about it, if you go to the underground, if you Google search it, not Semantic Zeus, but look for the toolkit, you start going to the underground forums, and they're selling botnet armies, 10, 15, 20,000 machines infected with Zeus. So you pay 10, 15,000, I think it's 1,000 per machine. You pay the money and you have your army. You can take down any website you want because you have that army to deny the service that company. That's some crazy shit. Oh, and they just added a feature onto that. So people that have that on their workstation, anytime you use your credit card, basically it snatches the credit card and pushes it to the Zeus application. Anytime you bank, anytime you log on to your banking website, it's insane. And that video shows you exactly how to use it. So it's kind of crazy. So if you download it, you can download it. And I know some of you might download it. You didn't hear it from me. You can put it on your like wife's computer, your girlfriend's computer.
You said that heard it from me though.
George, when you have one more. Damn, I can't remember the story. It was an important story for this. I don't want to go on to the next slide because then I'm going to forget. All right, so what is Nepenthes? Obviously, it's a honeypot. It's a versatile tool that collects malware. Nepenthes emulates known vulnerabilities. So you have MS-01 06 or MSO6 or MSO9 vulnerabilities on that module. Excuse me? SQL, it has all different type of modules. It also has ports that are open, so it doesn't have to be a vulnerability that the malware is attacking. It could just throw maybe a zero-day exploit onto port 135, and you know you have a zero-day that you got to push to your AV. So when the malware binary attacks the box, what it does, it downloads the binary and stores it as an MD5 hash, and you could reverse engineer it that way. A lot of people and don't think that this nemesis is only for enterprise environments or small business environments. If I was you, I'd run this in my house. It doesn't take a lot of resource, and you can know what's in your network. I have a big network at home, my brother does, I know Hans has it. You can just run it up and you can get live statistics on what's going on your network. Especially like small businesses and mid-sized businesses. It's a good product to have just to see if you're getting attacked. And if you are getting attacked, now you have some ammunition for your executive to say, look, this is why we need this product, or this is why we need more security in our environment. So why did I start using Nepethys? Know thy enemy. AV and IDS is refined signature. So you just have to wait for these signatures to get updated. So if you have any zero days, you're going to get blasted. If the AV company doesn't have the signature for the malware that affected you, it's just going to run rampant, which has happened to me. And the better and more we know about your environment, the easier it is to mitigate all issues. And yeah, it changed the signatures. Some malware changed signatures so you can't even detect it. So when collecting malware, like I said, you can generate statistics for your CTO, CEO, if you have access to them, or upper management and tell them, listen, I need this PS sent right now. You know, we need to get Ike on board so he could do our firewalls or something like that. And you can show us authentic data and stuff like that. And by the way, you didn't give me that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
so while I was consulting at the company was worldwide. I still do a little work for them. But they have a business, a BU, a business unit in every country in the world, except Antarctica and all that shit, small places. And they have over 200,000 workstations. And their thing was, it's an acceptable risk. I'm like, what do you mean it's an acceptable risk? Explain that to me so I could understand. They said, okay, we get hit with a virus. Everybody in this room that's on a workstation gets hit. Are you going to stop from going to the store and buying the product and drinking? Shit, man, that's pretty good, man. You're right. It's not going to stop. So who gives a shit? The money we spent on a virus outbreak that we had in 2006 was $5 million. $5 million to a company that makes around like $80 billion is nothing. They said, we'll pay for that. That's okay. That's an acceptable risk to me. $4 million. You want a product? Go buy it. Because we're going to spend $7 million on that. Okay. 2008 comes. You get hit with another virus. Guess what happens? Brazil gets hit with it. Production goes down. No more soft drinks. My boss has to fly to Brazil. Kev, what time is our on conference call? Every 3 hours, we was on a conference call. And I said, when are you going to learn? Are you going to hear me now? So, Nepethys comes into play, knowing your attack vector, knowing what's hitting you, what's infecting you, what's going on with that. Updating your clueless AV. So we would capture stuff and we'll say, AV, Symantec, here's the freaking EXP, here's a report explaining you what's going on, now give me a signature. Now wait in 5, 6, 7 days. Here's your signature, give me my signature because I gave you all your information. Your reverse engineering sucks because they take 6 days. Give me my shit. And plus, this is why I love it. $3.99. Open source. $3.99 is definitely for me. Here's our global configuration that we had. We had a Nephthys collector in every region. Not at every BU, because then it would be too much. You'll overwhelm the system. But in every region, Asia Pac, EMEA, Europe, LAR, and Mexico. Now, we put it in the biggest BU, in the biggest business unit that had 4,000 machines. We didn't put it in a business unit with 100, 200. It made no sense. So we did have to pay for a product. It was CW Sandbox, which is an automated analysis suite. It's not that much, depending on, you know, your business. The small business might be big. It was $12,000. Now, what happened? It's a bargain. Now, what's cool about it is that I program the Nephthys collectors. Once they get the EXC, they push it out to the sandbox. It gives you an automated analysis of what that malware is going to do. So you print out the XML file, shoot it to the AV, give me my signature. That's how it's working. I pay you, you got to give me my signature. What else I wanted to say about this? Oh, for the people that don't have the money, that are small business, you don't need this because you're going to have a small environment. You're not going to have a tax ranging in the 400 or 500. You're going to have a tax maybe 6 or 7. So you have a reverse engineer that does that. So they'll take one or two and reverse engineer it, find out what it's trying to do, and go ahead. You can use Ali Debugger. Go to Nikolai's Debugger course in 2 months, and he'll show you. And yeah, so it's badass. It's a badass product. So the thing is, once we put the Nephthys box in those regions, it was Wild Wild West. We started seeing worms left and right. We was getting 600 a day. It was even up to maybe 8 to 1,000 a day. Now, one CW sandbox, their load per day, they say 1,400. We was almost hitting that. That's how crazy it was. And what's great about Nephthys is once you hit it, it captures it, you know what it is, it'll send you an email, and it'll shoot it to CW Sandbox. Here are some of the modules. I don't know if you can see, but you have MS-04, 006, MS-05-17. They've updated some of their modules, which are pretty good. But if you see 135, there's nothing, or 139, there's nothing there. So if a malware hits 139, it'll collect it without any vulnerability. It also has a shellcode handler and a download handler, so it could download via or push via FTP. So, Nephthys installation. You have VSD, all the Windows lovers here, I know there's probably not none, maybe one or two here. They don't have it for Windows, but they do have it for Debian and Ubuntu. Apt-get install Nephthys. Oh, I just remembered the story that I was talking about. So, I'm sorry, I gotta bring this up because it's the best story. And I should have put it on the freezer to remind me. So, recollecting back to the articles that I was showing you, the ESPN highlight hacker attack, the best one I've heard so far, this takes the cake. Somebody hacked into Virginia's Social Security database, stole all of the security, and encrypted the file. This is a true story, you can look it up. Encrypted the file and then asked for a ransom. I want $10 million by Monday. I'm posting shit up on Quora, and I'm deleting that file. Guess what happened? You get that checkbook out, where you want that, or you want it in the Cayman Islands, $10 million. He got it. He got the $10 million, and they haven't caught him yet. I just wanted to put some more fuel on that fire. It just hit me. So anyway, going back to Nephthys installation. Debian, Ubuntu, I run it on Ubuntu, apt-get, install, Gentoo, emerge. You do have a source. So here's some of the XML malware analysis captured with Nephthys. So as you can see, it stores it as a hash, a file. It also has a PID, and you see the username, it runs it as administrator. Oh, it's gone. I'm sorry. I was getting into my... Anybody see the AT&T, what's the name? Vladimir and Twitter? Alright, that was supposed to be a joke, I think. So, here's the report continue. As you can see there, it has a source file, which is a hash, and then it has a destination file, which gives you, it infects Windows System 32, armin.exe. That's really relevant right there. Continued on, here's when it starts getting good. You see the PID 1612 is still there. On the bottom, it runs as an administrator. Now here's where it comes down. Winstock section, requested host, sex, ccc, serve.fcp.com, it couldn't resolve it. So then it goes down to the next one, sexccc.ath.cx, it results at 208.98.19.3, so now you see right here, remote address 19.3, remote port 6666. You know what's coming next. It's that botnet traffic, that IRC botnet traffic. So it's connecting to our IRC channel. It's establishing itself. The NIC to log on to the IRC is the XPDEU. The channel is Tibia2 and the password is TibiaBloat. And when you see malware, you be thinking foul ass language. Thank you. Birthday boy, you don't want that one? So it's connected back to the IRC channel, basically your host. Now, continued, the connection becomes a listening connection. It opens up a local port on 1910. So it can start receiving commands. You could start being a botnet herder. It's real pimp out there. All right, so here's a general approach to dynamic and static analysis. I'll turn this. So if you want to set up a controlled environment, definitely you don't want to go to your desk workstation and start running it and then everybody starts getting affected. Perform a behavioral analysis to examine the specimen's interaction with the environment, like I said. Alright, so what you need in your toy chest? Obviously you need VMware, make sure it's on a segregated network. Kev, you want to add on to this? Alright. You want to monitor your local and network, process monitor, process explorer, Wireshark, TCP, Snort.
Copy.
UCS.
Alright. Definitely go to his presentation next month. Shameless plug. Redirect DNS, your host file. I'll give you an example. I was reverse engineering something, and it was going out. I had Wireshark. It was going out, seeing where it was going. So what I did was I redirected the traffic. I just changed the host file and said 203 is this box right here. So when it redirected, it logged on. I created an IRC server. It logged on. I could do remote shit to that. It was pretty cool. And it's like a toy. It's like a puzzle. Once you start getting into this shit, you're like, oh man, this is here, and this is there. Damn, what else can I do? Can I do this? Can I do that? Wow. Now, you start thinking, malicious or good? Bad or good?
Bad or good,
okay?
Bad or good? Scabbing, huh? Popping firewalls? My favorite is obviously IDA Pro. You have your Ali debugger. What the bugger are you talking?
GDB.
GDB? GDB is the shit. Immunity debugger. They have books on IDA Pro and GDB for no starch. Immunity debugger is like a replacement of Ali debugger. And before I finish, just to add more fuel to that fire I was talking about, I was on the internet, and right before I came here, you have generic and behavioral-based threats increasing. What else we got here? We have botnets drive, look at this, botnets drive the rise of ransomware. That's some of the shit I was talking about with the Virginia. But you know what's crazy? When I seen this, my jaw dropped. Look at this shit. 1,800 office bugs was discovered by fuzzing botnet. Now, if you look right below it, it says that Microsoft created this fuzzing product. Microsoft used its own idling PCs and every part of the company connected to them all into one botnet. They botneted their own shit. That, my friend, you gotta give it to them for doing that. The sacks on them. So here, U.S. infrastructure at risk from sophisticated cyber attacks. Now, mark my words, my name is Marco Figueroa, and I'm gonna tell you that in the next 2 years, you're gonna see some part of the infrastructure of the U.S. get hit. Bad. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. Brazil was blacked out. I think it was last year, Kev, or the year before that? Brazil, when it got blacked out. It was because of hackers as well.
2.5 years ago.
So,
hold on, I gotta speak to that.
Go ahead.
I just found out today that there are federal regulations concerning critical infrastructure.
Yes.
That right now they're required to, people who control like power companies and whatnot are required to cinch up their security. And this summer they're gonna start getting fined for not compliant, not being in compliance. I don't know what that compliance is, but at least they're heading towards that.
It's called NERC.
You're NERC, that's right, NERC.
You missed your word, it's called ostensibly.
So. It's not when it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. I always say, the best security, well, my brother always says, the best security is not having your PC plugged onto the internet, and it's looking like that is the cause. The census report, I know you've seen the commercials and all that shit. I mean, I don't trust it. And so what? It's just your name and your date of birth, and they having you, you know, they're doing, charts on your area that you live in. You know, it's
constitutional prerogative. You have to do it.
I mean, maybe you have to do this. You have to.
You have to.
So you have to. Alright.
Regardless on what it is, that information will be stored in a database, and I believe like over the summer or over the last year, how good is security when our Pentagon gets
out? How good is science when you have no data?
I mean, you got valid points. If our infrastructure in the United States is secure and there wouldn't be a problem, then I'm still okay. But the fact that our most prized possession and it's supposed to be the most securest in the world.
You did not have this sensible meeting because they don't have that many prized questions.
They ask your name?
Yeah.
What are you going to ask?
Date of birth. From there, you start going to Facebook, start doing research on the game. I mean, there's tons of ways to do information.
It does not start with a sentence. It starts with Facebook.
Facebook
is a honeypot.
Somebody got to get into that discussion.
You know,
Moving on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bigger discussion. That's a definitely a bigger discussion. What I'm saying is that H.D. Moore, the number one hacker, supposedly, you know, allegedly, the number one hacker, he basically got hacked too. So, I mean, there's a lot of companies here, Fortune 500 companies, academia's here. You know, you're not safe. So even if you think that you are, your information is out there, you could be hacked or targeted. And like I said, if Obama's presidential campaign got hacked, I
was just going to ask, so technically, like, just to clarify everything Windows host.
That's based on BSD. They have VMs available, VM appliances available with Nepenthes. But they have, you could do VMware, and they have a VMware appliance for you, so you can just download it and do configuration.
Yeah, I run it on my Linux.
No, you have to run it on an OS.
No, I mean, if I look at that Linux, I can run
the VL. No. I haven't tried it, but do me a favor, give me an email. I know the developers, I'll ask them.
I mean, how's Crackle? I mean, not for me, but just depends on your research. Like,
Who runs the AV in here?
Well, we have a license from Norton.
From Norton?
Yeah.
Do you have a relationship at Enterprise, you can submit, but you got to make sure you get your signatures back.
All right, when you saw all those worms hit it, you know, how did you respond? And at that point, when you capture all this activity in your box, aren't you owning at that point? Are you sending the box?
No, because on the firewall, if you use the ITSS, you can block all that traffic from going out.
You're going to allow any.
Yes, exactly. Anything else. Now, what I usually do is have a conference call with my IAV to start building a relationship, because that's how you get ahead of the curve. Yeah, it fucking sucks, to use my language, to rely on a shitty antivirus, but you need them to help you mitigate all these machines that are infected. Microsoft's approach is to format it. I don't know if anybody works with Microsoft, but I was looking some stuff up, and their approach is, if something's infected, wipe it. Just re-image it. That's it. So you guarantee that you should clean it. But, you know, any other questions, George? You have a question?
I
have
a question for you. Yes. You're talking about Calder stuff.
Yes.
What has
Yeah.
Has there been used to look at traffic from industrial automation?
No.
Like
no.
You can get DH+.
You just lay it.
You
just lay it right onto the network. Right, square in the middle and see what it picks up. I forgot to bring it back.
So like big thing industrial automation, like power plants or generation stations. Yep. There's lots of protocols that sit on top of Ethernet that are not IP-based. And they, you know, are used for controlling all these sort of things like little displays that people have to touch to adjust valves and things like that. Has Nepenthes ever been deployed in an environment like that?
I don't know. Give me your email, and I can definitely find out. But it's
Yeah, it's not for that. It's basically for IP environment.
Because from my perspective, if I was somebody who's going in to try and disrupt the traffic inside, let's say, like a Con Ed plant or mm-hmm. something like that, I'd be looking at the things that control the boilers, that control the gas turbines, yeah. stuff like that. I wouldn't be thoroughly concerned with, like, can I hack a Windows box?
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's just there's a modem sitting at a control station that's 5 miles or 5 hours away that controls water levels on something. I heard a specific example today that someone had just dialed into this modem. I guess there's no firewall at all.
Yeah.
And they changed the level on at this valve station that fed into a hydroelectric plant.
Yeah. By the way,
stuff like that's out there.
War dialing is illegal, and H.T. Moore wrote a program for the iPhone, so you could war dial your iPhone. If anybody has iPhones, you can start war dialing and basically start hacking shit from your iPhone. And the crazy thing, I spoke to him at DEF CON. And I'm not saying that he could do this, I'm not confirming it, but he specifically told me that basically he could own any phone, any time if he has your number. If he has your number, your voicemail, your text messages, everything, he could
own. I'm not confirming it, but I'm definitely not denying it.
Yeah, so going back to what you said, you're right. I mean, our infrastructure is weak. What this does, it helps you know what's going on in your environment. Absolutely, like, it'll tell you, hey, you're getting hacked. The cool shit about it, too, is that people would be like, well, these script kiddies, they just let the malware go and then it runs wild and on your network. What's good about it as well is that if an actual person is hacking and you have somebody using Metasploit trying to attack that machine because it sees all these ports open, it basically takes their shell code and finds out what it's trying to exploit, so it's good in that aspect too.
There's one thing that I want to add. The way I would put Nefertis is outfitted before the firewall. So all traffic, everything is going right through that box and then passes the firewall and then comes on it inside of the network. Instead of doing it like a DMZ or anything like that, so then you can actually see if the network on the inside was infected on the way out, you'll be able to, Nefertis will be able to catch that stuff if you configure it that way.
That's false. I don't want you to say that. I'm sorry. When it's going out, you can only receive. So if it's going out, you're not going to see anything. But you're right. What I had on our IBM, my IBM laptop, and I forgot to bring it because I was in a rush, I had something sitting on a firewall. It has over, I have this on the edge. So if you have static IPs at home, take one of your IPs and throw it on there. You're going to see attacks from China, UK, Russia.
Allegedly.
Yeah. By the way, next month, all the IP addresses that we got, the one I'm going to be doing my demonstration on, IP addresses. So you can actually see it.
Now you know with the black hat around here. So I have the laptop right on the edge, and you get to see some of these wild, like it's coming from China. It's coming, it's regardless, your firewall's getting hit. If you have, let's say, SSH open on your specific IP address, and there's an exploit hitting SSH, you're going to get popped. So, any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What happens if your malware is being named a legitimate process? So, in a big enterprise, if you've whitelisted your application, but if your malware is registered as a legitimate process, what do you do then?
What's good about it is malware is not going to attack. Your enterprise application is not going to attack a bot across the network. Not going to do that.
So look at
unless you have file phones or a vulnerability scanner.
But the problem is malware has renamed itself a legitimate process, so.
But it's still going to scan along with your network.
It's not propagating.
So are you saying that
method? Scan it not like based on any kind of unique identifier so much as
correct. What it does is
filter.
Correct. It sits right on your network and just waits for attacks on the box.
How does it recognize the attack?
They have the open ports, and usually when you attack a machine, you're shooting that machine with a shell code. So for instance, exploit MS-09, which is the MSRP vulnerability, it attacks that box.
I want to reformulate this question
yes.
into something you probably all understand. So like spam filter back in the early 90s was accomplished by a whole bunch of citizens sitting around saying, if it had the words big cock in it, it's probably spam, and we're going to filter that out. Right?
Wait a minute.
Spam filter.
How you can tell if it's bullshit or not.
If something masquerades as a legitimate process, that and that's something that can slip past this filter, that implies that this filter is nothing more than the old school spam technique of a whole bunch of administrators going around writing ad hoc filter rules versus something like a Bayesian technique where we notice a certain kind or value of traffic, and that kind of value of traffic is more likely to be spam than not, therefore we drop it.
Okay.
Or, a hack attempt or whatever. So, I mean, they're qualitatively different approaches. One is an arms race, and the other one is, a physical methodology.
Mm-hmm. So, what Nemesis does, it weeds out all the bullshit. Because, let's say, the gentleman right there, Hans, or you are Nepethys collectors. So I'm malware, and I'm infected on a machine. So what I do is I have a specific shell code in my back pocket. And every time I hit somebody with a port scan, boom, are you vulnerable? 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 Yeah, you're vulnerable, yeah.
But how does it figure out that that's a shell code? That's the question.
Because what it does is it's collecting. It has all open ports. And, like, for instance, I'm using one port 139 for this exploit. Now, you have a patch, but you don't have a patch. So I'm hitting you.
Well, I agree that I have a patch.
Excuse me?
Because I'm already there because I agree not to have a patch.
That is correct. You appear not to have a patch. Nepethys is, like, just vulnerable. But you don't get shell code back. So once I say, oh yeah, port open 135, here's the shell code. I should get a shell back. No, you don't, because I don't respond to it. Take the shell.
No. I get that point.
Okay.
The question is, how would I identify it? You know, at some point within the software, you have to have some kind of back end architecture to identify an exploit as they happen.
Yes, and that's where CW Sandbox does. So what it does is it takes what binary it takes and stores it as a hash of the EFT. It doesn't know. Nepethys doesn't know of its SQL Slammer, of its Zeus. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. I store it as a hash. Now I push it through my CW Sandbox. And it does the automated analysis.
Well, it's more into the sandbox, what we're talking about. I'm not talking about,
okay.
I'm talking about the engine that determines whether or not something is a potential exploit.
All right, hold on. All right, here's the deal. Nepethys is pretending to be vulnerable. Tell it to be this exploit or this vulnerability or this one. So if something comes in and matches it, it keeps a hold of it, and then you have to go and Nepethys does.
But it has specific ports available.
Open. You tell it what to run.
But why does it have those specific ports?
What he's saying is that
it's a signature.
They determine. They have a port.
Yeah, he's going on force.
The creative, the specific.
Why creative is whatever
John
Miller is hacking to, or whatever malware.
Let's have an old version of SendMail with the wizard hack in there.
Alright, are you looking for an IDP?
Dependent is simply a honeycomb. It's collecting all the data, some of which it is pre-programmed to collect, which is the problem you're talking about. It's not a database right now.
Okay.
And then it hands the data off to a machine coming to secure analysis by running it under VMware. So it does a behavioral analysis, because it looks at all the things the thing does when it runs on a safety.
And then
that's what outputs the XML. Okay. And that XML file is the list of things it's trying to do.
You have a question?
Any other questions? Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. If you have this, let's say this is a network, and you have the way Ike's sitting, and Ike gets a binary. It's an attack. That's it. No false positive. Unless you have a vulnerability scanner scanning the network. That is it.
What if somebody's Google searching for a robot attack?
Google shouldn't be searching on your network. Bottom line. That means you need to get fired as a security officer. Google's doing that. You need to get fired immediately, bro. What I do recommend, if you do want to learn about reverse engineering, there are some cool books. If you buy me a beer, I would definitely tell you. Right? Now, but seriously, you have, if you don't like reading, you have a course that is called Reverse Engineering Malware. Lenny Seltzer teaches it. Cool dude, really good. Sam. They have reverse engineering power. Good. Really good. You're gonna pick up a lot of tools and a lot of things. Yes, sir. There is a black hat course. Who's interested? Pedro Romini. I wouldn't recommend you to take it, but that dude is nice, so I would tell you to take that one. I don't really like black hat classes unless your corporation is playing for it. Make sure you don't pay for it.
So can you tell us a little bit about the background of NetBeans? Like what language it was written in, when your project originated?
Yeah, it originated, I believe, in 2005. It was from two dudes from Europe. I believe it's written in Python. It's just like Honeybee. If you don't know what Honeybee is, it's a honeypot. They based it sort of on Honeybee. So, but it's much cleaner. You can use it with CW Sandbox, which is good in a large environment. I don't know, you know, the companies that people work in here, but in the large environment that I work in, it is critical for us. Critical. It helps us, like, mitigate almost all of our infrastructure. And it's hard to do that in different countries, different time zones. And we used to get hit in Asia-Pac, where China's at, where Russia's at, we would get slammed. They're just the king of malware over there. Any other questions? Another thing, I like to just thank the people that came from BCNYC group. Me and my brother, we started our own group, meetup group. It's sort of like this. We have it more uptown. There's a few people here from there. And like I said, if you guys like hacking, we do like different stuff from breaking into boxes, securing it. Anything you want to ask for on the meetup? I don't know what's great.
The most important thing, seriously, and I don't break into boxes.
Like, what's this called? Malware at work, right?
No, no, that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
No credit for you. Had your name written all over.
At least it's not extremely to but the reason why, and seriously, why you and my brother do this is because the lack of security that this country needs is unbearable. Really, really unbelievable.
Yeah, and private sector as well.
Private sector is completely different world. That's even a worse shambles. But I'll get into it next month in detail, and I'll be going into a little bit more.
Yeah, another thing, on our meetups, you could just look up DCNYC meetup groups. Like I said, some people that have this on our meetups, you definitely talk about breaking in, hacking. What was our last speaker here? Hacking, I know what it was. Hacking the medicine was breaking into regular PCs and workstations in less than 50 seconds. So,
went wild with subscription,
yes.
Breaking on the keyboard.
And definitely,
Now, we're not telling these people and teaching these skills so you can go out and do it. Of course, you could have been playing on it, but we do it so when you get home, you look at the wireless weapon and be like, oh, I gotta change this, you know? And also to give better skill sets if you choose to send the wire on to the security and the computers and stuff. So I really believe the only way to be knowledgeable about this stuff is actually getting your hands dirty with it. And that's why we took the approach into going and making these little labs so you can come into meetings and, you know, play around and understand it a bit better. Because one thing you'll do is talking, but, you know, you'll go to places you go to restaurants. You know, this past year in August, there was about 8,000 hackers. Out of those 8,000 hackers, at least, I would say a good 1,000 of them may be true. The rest all talk a lot of truth. So we're not the type of person, we're not the type of people to want to get information out without just actually trying to get their own. And that's the reason why we took the approach on our meeting groups to do little tutorials, little lessons on how to actually do it.
Yeah. And the reason why also we did that was because we see a lot of corporations now are so vulnerable. You know, we want to be there to teach them how to secure themselves properly, because they'd be like, yeah, I got a follow-up, I have ideas, and why are you still getting rooted and having malware?
Right, just one system. Tell them about the story about Home Depot. That would be a perfect story.
I used to work for Home Depot back in the day, and they had a vulnerability in their system. And their vulnerability was that from a regular LAN workstation, you can basically connect back to their corporate office in Atlanta and see all of the money transactions that were happening. That's credit card information, that's regular credit cards and Home Depot, the names. And you could take it, and I don't know if you know about credit cards, but that credit card readers give the name, you put it there, and you just have it swipe, and they'll put the information right on it. And these are some of the things that we're seeing out in the wild. It's, I'm telling you, like, if you look at it and you follow up on Twitter and stuff like that, you can see some crazy stuff that's going on. And it's really about informing yourself and user awareness. Like, and this is the last example. I know Ike got to say something. There was an email that was sent to me this week that it almost got me. It almost got me. I'm not going to lie. I know about this. I'm aware of it. But I'm like, it was a UPS email. It said, listen, we tried to deliver a package to your house, man. It was like last week, January 26th. Download this to see if this form is yours. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, like, hold on, I didn't order this. What the hell is this? I was like, should I? Nah, this is some bullshit, because I didn't order anything. But I'm not going to lie, if I ordered something from UPS, I probably would have clicked because it had an ending of a UPS manager. It was like, service manager at UPS, and I'm like, did I really order something? And I had to stop and tell my brother, like, look at this email, man, this shit almost got me. it almost got me, and I'm aware of it. So like I said, just know your stuff. Like on Twitter, you have a few things. You can catch my brother or me on Twitter, HealthNet Security, Security Focus. You want to be aware of these things, because eventually, to me, and I'm going to say this now, your identity is going to eventually get stolen. So have some life lock or something. Yes?
Do larger companies have underwriters that require them to have like stuff in place, like security measures in place,
yes,
like you know, insurance?
Yes, yes. They usually have that. A lot of companies, I don't know, like I said, I don't know who's here, but usually there's a lot of companies that take security lightly to get hacked. I have a friend that works for a porn company. I'm telling you, this porn company is huge. They have over 500 sites, and he said, we got hacked, man. Can you do a pen test? I was like, you want to pony up the cash? I'll do it. Pony up the cash, I did it. I see vulnerabilities, whatever, whatever. But he told me, he said specifically, if they would get this information, they put us out of business. Now, I don't know if they'll put their company out of business, but that's less money in my pocket, you know, if they put a company out of business that I work for. And that's what I'm trying to say. Tell your managers, man. Let them know. Your social security is in there. So if you work for these large corporations, especially being a financial district, you best believe that a bank that you work in or a Wall Street firm is being attacked, man. Hedge funds, all that. Citibank, Chase is always getting hacked.
Right, I'll just put up a good point to that.
Anybody work for banks?
Hold on. Let me bring that in right now. I used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank, and we get one of the security people. They would get 3,500 checks. Now, you would think, and that's the other. And you would think, because they're the Federal Reserve Bank, they're going to have the utmost qualified people in there.
Bullshit.
I have no college degree, and I won't get a college degree because there is no college that I can teach you when I need you, and I have a problem with it. A huge
value.
So long we know that the federal government, they will stick me in different groups. I only trust my pants. I'm working with this guy, he's a PhD, I'm working with this guy, he got his master's, this guy got his CISSP, and lo and behold, you put them in front of the system to actually do something, and it's a long continuous policy and procedure. And I can totally understand that, but what are you doing to protect this bank? And let alone that they're attached to 12 other Federal Reserve throughout the United States. And yeah, they do a great job of mitigating it, but I guarantee you, at about 1,300, one of them is going to go through. And are they going to catch those people? No, they're never going to catch these people. They're on different, on foreign soil where we have no foreign relations with. So we can never go back to where we get these type of things, and we can do our best to try to find out these different types of signatures and just make ideas a little bit more secure, but it's
not. I wouldn't
want to know. One more thing that I want to add in is, he said about AVs and signatures. Almost all AVs wind up
pretty
much blocking NetCat. I don't know how many people know NetCat in here.
Yep.
All right. Do you know if you open up the source of NetCat and change the header, your AV is never going to pick it up?
Wow.
That's
because you work off of cryptographic signatures.
And
right,
of open signatures.
The whole
thing is like
cryptographic signatures. One
big
change
and
the signature changes.
It's the same program, but the signature changes. So how is the antivirus ever going to catch up on it?
That's why antiviruses will never work.
Pretty much. It's a false sense of security, I believe. Using my network with our antivirus for about 6 weeks.
You want security? No, it's QNX, sir. No, they attacks for QNX.
Any other questions before I finish the 8 o'clock? Yes, sir.
One quick question for you to sum it all up.
8:15, we wrap it up. Definitely done.
That's good. Sounds kind of ridiculous.
There's no understand this. Have a good one. Take care, buddy.
In the resulting of all this, you know, running at this, looking at all these hacks and all these attacks, it's reasonable to say that the bulk of them are directed at Windows, right?
Yeah.
So in your environment, you know, what you're dealing with, do you ever tell somebody, said, look, easiest thing you can do, no Windows. From this point forward, stop using Windows.
I mean, I got the best answer. I got the best answer for that.
Okay.
Who's this? You're fired. Fired.
Donald Trump.
That's what you're going to get in a large environment, because the world, whether you like it or not, and I hate Windows, but regardless, you have your regular users that need Windows.
But do you feel like that would be an adequate
of course,
solution?
Of course.
Kind of business?
But then if you go with Mac, you know, I don't
know. It's not an adequate solution at all. Mac has as many moments as Windows.
It's about as bad as security by obscurity, in that sense. It's not any better than, you know, shifting to another platform and having everybody do it. You're still going to have the same problem.
Now,
but do you think that would sort of mitigate some of these larger companies where, you know, every idiot's got, you'll hear that you're
going to hold it for all the time. In terms of business, from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense, because if the whole room uses Windows, and I say, you force to go into Linux Mint.
They don't even know it. The question is that if you're training an office full of people who have to answer the phone, entertainment, right? And
that's a different scenario.
Full of your computers. If you've got a company that's got, let's say, like 1,000 people answering the phones, it's got 1,000 computers in your home. So would it be wrong to say to these people, you know what?
No, your
users would be better served by going back to, like, you know, the dumb terminals you had in the 1980s, just plain old test input. Because there's nothing they do that they actually win.
But you need to persuade that CTO and CTO.
No, I'm saying, but from your perspective, is it?
Of course it is.
So what would be better for somebody to go almost back 10 years, or 20 years in some cases, in the evolution of, like, the desktop computers, it averages your guess to make security better? If people were to go back to just plain old dumb terminals and plain old telephones and get rid of all the fanciness of having Windows and having, you know, all these sort of ways of getting email, that, you know.
You're right, I'm going to tell you something
really exciting. You know, I used to work for American Express. And you know what one of the CEO told me?
In a way.
He said that it would be cheaper to have people using PCs that they know that are going to get hacked than having a secure system. Because it takes them more time to train somebody how to use a secure system. And I'm not talking about 300-400 machines. We're talking about 30,000 machines.
That is what they call a deceptive risk.
Leon Coker, the pit coach.
Yes. So guys, any other questions? So I hand it over to I. Yes, sir.
Well, to get back to that whole Windows conversation. If you're a consultant, not for this big company, but a small company, 10 employees, they're completely all Windows.
Yep.
Telling them to say, it says the Linux box is 24 year old, why can't, you know, if I can run Nmap, Wireshark, all my other security software on my Windows box, why can't I run this on Windows box? Why is there not any effort to move this up, you know, support this on Windows box?
I agree. And that's the question I want to ask the
developers.
For me, it's not a problem. What was a problem was convincing them that I needed an Ubuntu or PSD box in the environment of 200,000. So I had to ask for it and then give them a special reason to get that to pull. So I agree with you saying.
Developers is a Linux cap question.
I think it's a window, and I also think. And I think for the developers, they're like, well, why are we going to create an emphasis on Windows when the shit is vulnerable all the time? It's going to get owned anyway. So I think that's what that
answer
would be.
No, it's not about how vulnerable it is. You know, software. The question of the fact that you write this shit on Unix, and on Unix you have certain APIs, you can pretty much guarantee to be available. And if you have a certain amount of interest in porting into Windows, which, by the way, most security researchers fucking hate, then you can maybe get it over there. But the fact of the matter is, there's a large interest mismatch between Windows and Unix development, and even though it may seem positive, there's still lots of guys.
That is correct, but I still think,
why would you run this on a platform that's known to be
vulnerable? And that's why they, from my perspective, they have it
out. Wait, I thought the discussion was that All platforms.
I have a question dealing with that since before. Let's take that for a green topic.
It's a green topic. I'm not a developer. John Kupai speaks, actually GNM also, right? This is arena. But it's a Winnie Cap issue. We're putting your name in the infamous vote to deal with the mess.
You know how we answer that? We basically email the developers and ask him. Any other questions for Nepotism? We answer that by emailing the developers. I'll do that tonight. They have a specific IRC channel that I go to, and it's not botnet. Any other questions before I hand it over to him on Nepotism? And it's over.